Well, I now want to go over the typical mistakes that others make that they have written me about, and perhaps we can do something from our insights to help them avoid this. The first and most common error, which all of us made in the beginning, was that we picked the horse that was good its last race, but is not going to run up to that race this time. Consequently, we're on a false favorite when our second or third choice should have been our pick. The delineation between second and third choice, and I'm talking about numerical choice, when you have a first choice that is so obvious, is one of the big problems. Now, what are some of the indications that a horse that looked like a world beater from his last race is going out of form? If we can correct that, we'll get an awful lot of high-priced horses. Bob, you want to start that ball rolling?
Well, if it's been quite a while since he's been on the track, I don't like to use arbitrary days, but let's say that he had a real bang-up race in his last race, and it was the same class, same distance, everything appears to go to use that pace line. But it's been 2 to 3 weeks since he's been on the racetrack, and you look down at the workout, not a solitary workout since his last race. To me, that's a tip-off that the horse has got some problems, especially if we're talking about claiming races.
You're bringing up, I'm making some notes here and comment on it. Tom, how do you handle a horse that looks like he's a world beater from his last race, but when he runs today, he's finishes down the track?
I'm going to run along with Bob on this because I'd love to bet against a last out winner that's been kept in the barn for 3 or 4 weeks. There's just no, especially a claiming horse, there's no reason to keep him in the barn. There was a horse called Next Bend that just ran at Santa Anita last weekend at a short price and won easily and impressively and spent 3 weeks in the barn.
That's a very good point. How long, if the trainer thought the world of him and he was ready to repeat that performance, why did he wait so long to run him?
And why does he leave him at the same class level or step him up only one level if he runs a world-beating type race? That's the kind of horse you want to protect from the other claims.
Very good idea. Is he offering that horse for sale too cheap? Good idea. Larry, any comments on that one?
Well, no, the mistakes I made, getting back to mistakes, is that I forget that the classier horses can be off longer than the cheaper horses, and that falls in the same category there.
Al?
Well, if you want to do a little extra work, you can run a profile on the horse, and a lot of times that'll give you an indication. The horse that won his last race may not have necessarily run his best race in terms of being close to the pace. He may actually have been going downhill and have happened to pick up a win against lesser horses. If you see a horse that's regressing, that his pattern is going the other direction, and you can pretty much assume that he's going to continue his regression. And that regression sometimes can be speeded up, or that a hard win can be a catalyst because it takes so much out of a horse that he'll reach that point where he's going to really tail off right after that.
Frank, I'm kind of making notes of what everyone said.
Well, I sometimes found that if you take a look at the horse's last out and it was a very good race and he was right there or maybe even won the race, and you take a look at his second back and he was also very competitive, it just might be that that last out took an awful lot out of him. And when it came around for this particular race or today's race, he just didn't have it. He put it all together in his last, and even though it looked good, he didn't have anything left for today.
Ron?
I can't think of a thing to add.
Okay, I'll sum up then. And to sum up what we're trying to get people away from is betting the obvious choice because he had an excellent, apparently excellent, last race. We have found out if you throw out some of these horses or discount them or move them to your third choice, that you then move the alleged numerical third choice up to second, and you'll be betting him and getting better prices. What I think we have said is, look to see how the horse ran the race. If he ran against a very hard pace, against a very fast pace, and he had to close especially strong to win, that's an indication that he's not going to do as well this time. If he had too easy an early pace and was not contested and won easily, it's a little better sign, but it's still another sign that if he's contested today, he's not going to do as well. Look for a bad fraction or an exceptionally good fraction that overwhelms the other. Remember, if that horse won that race and he had to do it with a strong closing effort, he's far less likely to repeat today than he would if he had an easy pace accomplishment, off the pace, and then moved in. But a closer, something to watch out for, they seldom repeat. Any other comments on that? Because you realize that if we can get people away from those horses that appear to everybody on the track to be the best horse and can get them to the next two, they'll get much better odds and you'll get much better win percent.
When you get away from the claiming ranks and you move into allowance and even stakes company, you're looking at a class or type of horse, they generally can repeat performances much better than your claiming race, claiming horses can. But a good tip-off, we were just talking about, even the claiming races, if particularly a filly has had two hard driving finishes where she is challenged in the stretch, then the third effort is going to be much, much less. That driving finish under a challenge from other horses takes an awful lot out of it.
Truly does.
Three is about the maximum for colts and geldings. And we're talking about classy horses, not claiming horses. Two hard driving finishes for fillies and three hard driving finishes for colts. You better not use any one of those last three races because they're just not going to perform for that today. If they do, you're going to get beat. Maybe you shouldn't bet the race anyway.
A good indication of that is in at New Orleans, at Fairgrounds, you have the lowest percentage of repeat winners of any track in the country because of the 1,349-foot stretch. You see them start whipping that horse to death as they come around the turn all the way to the finish, and they have a very low percentage of repeaters. And when you see that a horse had to win under a driving finish, you can fairly well say that a lot was taken out of that horse, even though it looked like a brilliant finish, that it's not going to repeat it. And maybe the reason that it was not, as take it back to Tom's, that he laid it off for 5 or 6 weeks even after a win, that's the reason. And 5 or 6 weeks isn't long enough.
Another thing to look at sometimes is the spacing or intervals between recent races. If your last time out horse was a winner, but he'd run, oh, say, 7 to 10 days apart for the last three times out, he's just about used up to get that win, and he's probably awfully tired by now. So I often look to see the interval between the last three races and see if they've been racing, the races have been fairly close together.
Good point. The next common mistake that people make is that they are looking for a specific rule. They're looking for a specific guideline in days off. They're looking for a specific race, whether it's got to be either the best race or the second best race. If you try to categorize the race, the pace line you're going to use by best, second best, within 30 days, or any specific rule, you are going to pick the wrong pace line. In my estimation, I've seen people who are looking for set rules and picking a pace line will never pick the right pace line consistently.
That's correct.
Anybody got any statement? All of us were trained as children to live by rules. How do you overcome a cultural pattern that says live by rules in one instance, Frank, and then not go by rules in horse race handicapping?
Well, I think if we got into set rules, there are a number of very highly qualified handicappers, and I'm not aware of anyone, even through the use of computers, that are able to lay down strict rules and provide themselves with a high percentage of winners. It's just not possible. If it was, we would be sitting here saying, here are a number of factors to plug into your computer, and you're going to come out with 90%, and that's impossible. There's the element that you're dealing with an animal who is subjected to a lot of different kinds of feelings and emotions, just like a human is. And there's just it's impossible to be so rigid that you will anticipate receiving consistent results in that way.
Tom, you're a corporate executive, and a large corporation has rules set down for its people. How can you follow and dictate certain rules in your executive capacity and then say in handicapping that you should not follow any given set of rules?
Well, that's easy, because every time I try to set rules for myself in this game, I wind up feeling it in the pocketbook. And that's where you would break it down. I can't stay within. The recency is the good example of that, because if you try to keep it within a 21 or a 24-day period for the last race or a 22-day period, that ignores the fact that horses are different, just the same as human beings are different. And some horses thrive on running every 30 days. And if you have a 21-day cutoff on that, you're going to take a beating at the racetrack. But you have to show some flexibility. It depends on the horse itself. It's easy to stay within corporate rules because I get paid on those, but not at the racetrack.
You win with corporate rules, but you'll lose using rules in racing. One phrase that is constantly used, which I don't like, and I'd like to get your comments on it, is we talk about eliminating horses. All elimination rules that I've ever read eliminate horses. That's a negative factor. You eliminate rather than include. I like to think that you look for positive factors and include a horse in your figuring rather than eliminating a horse. Anybody got some comments on that? Because picking a pace line, of course, is based upon eliminating or including. And I prefer to think we include the winners, and by the process of just including the positive, the rest go by the wayside.
Well, the pace line will eliminate for you. Because if you're picking a proper pace line, by including a horse doesn't beat you, because the pace line itself will eliminate that horse.
Good point. So there's a positive point. Finds things that would cause you to include the horse rather than exclude the horse.
If your perception of today's race is correct, how you view the race is going to be run, and you actually painted a mental picture by taking, if there are eight horses in the field, eight different pace lines, you've painted a mental picture in your mind on how the race is going to be competed today. And the pace lines, as Tom says, are what eliminates the competition.
One thing that I have found that people do is that they will tend to eliminate a horse prior to evaluating its class potential. And the class, of course, will alter the pace line. And many people send me races where they've thrown out the horse that is three times. His average purse value is three times the purse of today's race, and they did not bother to find that out ahead of time.
Probably because of a poor performance in his last or in the last couple of races, which is a mistake.
Never throw out a top-class horse, and the first way you measure class is the purses the horse has been running for. Al, you have something there?
Well, I want to go back on the comment that Tom was making about recency and setting class rules on that. In this day and age of racing, I don't think you can use a 30-day rule or a 15-day rule. And it's my opinion that the racing secretary, as you know, or may not know, writes a condition book that is good for a two-week period. Now, if you've got a horse that has just won, he deserves a little rest, and then you want to bring him back at his appropriate class. Well, that's not automatic. Races are written by the racing secretary, and you may not be able to get into the appropriate race at the appropriate class after a win. You may have to wait a while, and that period of time can be 3 or 4 weeks. So just because you see a horse laid off for that period of time does not mean that there's anything wrong with him. It's just that there wasn't the available race. What you do want to check for, though, is to see if the horse has been on the track, if he's working out. Not necessarily the time of the workouts, but the fact that he's on the track and working out.
That's an excellent point. The old cliches about, boy, if they come back in 7 days, they're a world beater, and they come back within 14, those rules cannot be applied anymore. They shouldn't even be published anymore, because it's almost impossible. Al owns horses, and he knows he might want to put a horse in 7 days, but what do you get?
Yeah. Get on the also eligible list if you're lucky.
Yeah. So forget all those old books you read and those old pamphlets you bought telling you that watch out for those trainer maneuvers 7, 14 days, because it's almost impossible sometimes to get a horse back in that time.
A competent trainer earns his living by keeping that horse fit on or off the racetrack. And if he's competent, you can go with
him. When people seek to go beyond the 60 to 63% wind proficiency and get up into the 70s and even up into the 80s by more careful selectivity, that they are able to reduce the number of contenders that they're going to put into their computer or they're going to handicap with their hand calculator to 5 or at the most 6. Now, the reason for this is if you have 10 horses that you're calculating, some horse that would otherwise not figure might have one good fraction, and when you see it in your readout, you'll worry about it, and it will give you a distorted view of the overall picture of the race. Whereas if you can reduce it to 5 or at the most 6, you will get a proper perspective of the course the race will take from looking at their readouts. So consequently, the subject we're going to address right now in group session is to how to get the number of contenders down to 5 or at the very most 6. Tom, you brought up the fact that you look for 3 bad races in a row and no justification within those races to indicate he's getting better today. You want to expand on that?
Well, a dull performance is, as long as we've survived the class determination and made sure that the horse belongs, a dull race is an indication the horse is either off form or going off form, one or the other. 2, you really shouldn't see if the trainer's worth his salt, and if the horse is worth its salt, you shouldn't see 2 dull efforts without some moves or hidden fractions within those races. By the time you get to a 3rd one, I've generally gotten rid of him anyway, but a 3rd one I generally take 3 and eliminate at that point.
I think we're all pretty much in agreement on that, but always look for a hidden fraction in those otherwise dull races because it might change your perspective.
Or an enormous class edge and some indication on the workout line that the horse is going to wake up.
Yeah. Now, another thing that you brought up, Larry, was horses coming from other tracks where the class of the track was much lower. How do you handle that?
Well, I've done some work on repeaters, and I did the entire Del Mar meet. They very seldom came in the money. None of them won. I'm talking about winners at lesser tracks, the shippers.
Right.
They're out.
So in short, always look at the track from which the horse came, and when you'll see a 20% or a 40 or a 60% lower class track, don't expect it to function at a higher class track at the same level it did at the lower class track. Contrary-wise, this is the people in the Bay Area of California are talking about but never seem to do anything about. When a horse from Southern California tracks go up there, he invariably does a lot better than they expect him to. You've had experience with that, haven't you, Tom?
I lived in San Francisco for 2 years, and I steadily played Southern California horses that were coming up, and horses that we frankly couldn't take a pace line on. There just wouldn't be a race from the South that you could take a pace line on, and they would still win.
So think positive going from a higher class track to a lower class track, and negatively of a horse that is going up in track class. And other aspects of class are you many times find that a horse is going up in class without justification, without any win or an outstanding performance is going up in class. Do you discount those horses equally? Bob?
Not right off the bat. I'll look at a horse that's moving up in class, particularly allowance. I mean, they have to move up an allowance company. They go through the conditions, cycle of conditions. But if a horse is being moved up in class for no apparent reason, then I am going to probably not include it. There has to be a reason for a horse moving up in class.
Well, there's no effort that seems to indicate that it should move up in class. That's usually a negative sign, unless, as Bob says, you find some indication of a maneuver that points to a win. A good example happened the other day, and I'd like to have you people address the subject of claimed horses. A lot of people think that when a horse is claimed that he's going to improve on the next race, but is it not true that sometimes a horse will be claimed who looks like he's not too good today but was once good, and the horse wants, the trainer wants to keep the horse to improve it back to its previous level, and will put it up in class purposely so that nobody will take it from it. Have you found that to be true?
Well, first of all, it depends on how quickly they come back. They obviously have to run 25% higher within 30 days or in a claiming jail. But people who buy horses always think they're worth more than what they pay for them anyway. So they generally will pitch them a little high, whether they're in claiming jail or not. When they bring the horse back to what you know is its proper level, if you've done your pace line selection right, that's when you want to bet the horse.
So generally speaking, if a horse is over its head in class, either because of the track it came from or the claiming or allowance level, that is a good indication that he should not be positively considered. Al, how do you regard wins? Some people say if the horse hasn't won in 10 efforts, there's no reason to expect he's going to win today. Do you use that as a hard, fast rule, or do you kind of ameliorate it with your own concepts?
Well, I don't know what ameliorate means, but no, I don't have any hard and fast rules. I think if you get locked into those, you're going to miss some winners. I look at the total picture of the horse, and if it hasn't won in several times out, perhaps you can make an excuse for a lot of those disappointments. Changes in class, changes of competition, maybe even a change of track. There could be a lot of different reasons. I am interested in what the horse has done or not done in the past, and who he's not done it against or not done it against, and then I want to see what his current condition is. I usually can do that by seeing how well he's running, how close to the pace he runs. And if I think a horse is rounding into shape and is in condition and all the other factors seem to be there, I don't care if he's won one race out of 20. In fact, I like it because it usually means I'm going to get better odds.
That's right. When he finally does win, he's going to pay well. And it's inherent in the pace program that you're using, in the methodology you're using, that you will spot that horse when he's ready to win. So don't eliminate a horse just because you see no wins. By the same token, that is certainly something to look at. A horse's win record is something to look at as a positive factor. Okay, how do we deal with long layouts? When a horse coming back off a long layout, do we automatically eliminate him, or is there something that might leave him in? Tom, you were talking about...
Yeah, because that's one of the first, and I'm not going to say rules because we've talked about that, but it's one of the first things I look at. After I've run a class program of one sort or another on the race, usually average purse value, unless a horse has got some kind of an edge or at least a bet, an extended layoff is a throwout for me. Some trainers specialize in it, but you're going to spend more time studying your trainers than you are cashing bets if you're going to go to that extended. You're not going to lose many winners in that respect.
It's more critical to the horses coming back after a long layoff going into a route race.
Uh-huh.
It's much more difficult to get a horse into condition through workouts and training alone to run a distance of ground than it is to get a sprinter back in to run maybe six furlongs.
No question about it.
We have found statistically that when you find a horse with a high class edge, by high class edge we just generally mean he's been running for much higher purses. When he's coming back after a long layoff and he's traditionally a pretty high-class rotter and they suddenly stick him into a sprint, then you watch out for him because he can run away with lower-class sprinters. But if they put him into a route, it's generally for exercising. That's what the statistics say, and the experts here seem to agree with the statistics.
Unless he happens to be catching a very soft field, of course your baseline will tell you that.
And they seldom route coming back, then you'll find him go into a sprint. The only trouble with that is that the consensus people sense this too. They know he's a much higher class horse, and he usually goes off at low odds. So that's the kind of a race where you either pass the race or include that horse, because he's very likely to win the sprint. Okay, any further comments on the class angle? Dean, you want to make any comments on...
I have some comments. It's on elimination of horses, but it's on... for the last time now, I don't know if it's always on the cover or not. But a lot of times the trainer will put a horse in race one as a tightener, get the horse ready for a better race to see if he
can go the distance because of distance change, you know, from router, sprinter, back and forth. And a lot of times I've noticed that they put him in there to see if he's within that class or not.
How do you tell, though? Is there some way you can determine whether that's a tightener or a realistic effort?
Well, I usually look at what they've done in the past, and if you honestly go by the amounts of money to the races they've been in, and you actually watch their pace line, if they're out of class, you can definitely see it, because they'll never come within 8 or 9 lengths of a win. So, and a lot of times, I found that a horse will be claimed, and the trainer will just throw him in the race to see what's wrong.
Okay, and in conjunction with that, let me reduce it to a little more specific thing. You will find that if you do a portion of the manual referred to as pace of the race, pace of the horse, you will look at the pace of the race that the horse did well against and the pace that he did not do well against. Look to see how he ran against a given opening speed in feet per second velocity or a good closing. If he never does well against a 60 feet per second opening fraction, then that horse is not going to do well against that fast and early fraction. So you're looking to find him in a race with a lower early fraction. Contrarywise, if he's an early speed horse but never seems to win, look to see what kind of a closing fraction he always fails against. And then see if he's placed today in a race where the closing fraction is within the parameters of his ability. You can tell more from looking at the pace of the race, pace of the horse program, about where a horse is properly placed than you can by thinking in terms of trainer maneuvers. And I don't want to say anything negative about trainers, but I have several trainers who are clients. And this is why I cringe whenever I hear people talking about trainers as knowing precisely what they're doing at all times. A, most of them have to enter horses into races that they might not otherwise be able to enter into because they have to pay the feed bill. According to the records that I have from trainers themselves, and I'm not making this comment negatively about them, this is their own comment, 80% of the trainers are so concerned with medication, bandages, and cleaning up after the horses that they have no time for strategy. Only about 20% of your trainers are truly strategists. So don't put too much credence in the brilliance of the word trainer just because they have trainers. You can tell as much about a horse as they can. In fact, we have several trainers who are using the pace of the race, pace of the horse program, to determine where to put their horses, where to place them. If they're using it to know where to place them, you can use it to know where properly placed. So that's an important program. Anybody, did you find that when you started using that program, Bob?
One of the keys to my success with this method is the pace of the horse, pace of the race program. We've used other factors and several different things, but I've never given up the use of the pace of the race, pace of the horse program. I always print it out every day. I think it's a very strong indicator of where that horse belongs, how he can run against a given pace. And I wouldn't think of going to the track to wager my money without having that run that program that day.
Okay, the next thing that Ron brought up that is very simple. And his point was that public handicappers may not one by one be very good pickers, but it's folly to ignore them and not consider their. You want to elaborate on that?
Well, yeah, that's what I use as my jumping off point, I guess, in order to sort of get the horses in the race in the top half, bottom half, or whatever. I take the consensus pick and I look at the odds in the racing form, and I will take the top 5 or 6 horses and I will do a pace line on those horses. I haven't eliminated the others at this point, but once I've done the first, say, 4 or 5 horses, top horses, then I have a good guideline to compare the other horses with. And unless I find something very unusual about those other horses, such as a good internal fraction or much higher in class or whatever, then I usually have, I've eliminated them.
Well, these guys are being paid good money to be public handicappers. Let them work for us. We won't use their selections, but we sure won't overlook one of their selections. Nothing more embarrassing than to have your handicapping sheet, be at the track, make your bets, and see the winner come in, you didn't have him, and he was the favorite, and he was number one in the consensus. Maybe you wouldn't have chosen him, but there's no excuse for not at least having figured it. I don't expect everybody to buy one of those television recording systems where you can, if you have a closed circuit channel or a public television channel or a UHF channel that broadcasts the races. But Bob has that, and Bob has noticed something by, he has a little mechanism by which he can stop the race at any point. Where do you stop the race, Bob?
Only at the second call.
And why do you, why at the second call?
I want to see who's in contention there, because 90% of the time one of them is going to come right out of that group.
Okay, now this is in essence how I determine what horses not to include. The first thing I do is use that section at the back of the manual which tells you how to read the previous day's result charts and determine the bias of a track. If you're at a track where the top four velocity ratings at the second call are winning every race, then it would be folly for you to choose horses other than those whose velocity ratings were made them capable of being in the echelon of the top four. Because consistently, day in and day out at that particular track, that group wins. Contrarywise, you might find at your track that horses that are 2.5 lengths off at the second call are the winners, and then those who are leading at the second call never hang on. Always include the horses that fit the category at the second call that your track is biased toward, be it early or a little bit off the pace. I just go down to the second call and just do the raw fraction. Just, it's 42, 44-4, or 45-2, or 46, whatever it is. If they have to be a little bit off the pace, I'll take the ones who are just correctly off the pace. If they have to be on the pace, I'll take the top four or five that are on the pace and eliminate the others. What matters is that the horse can close faster than any horse if the closers aren't winning at that track? Or what matters it at a closing track if a horse has the fastest velocity of the second call? If it's New Orleans, they're going to say goodbye to him around the stretch turn. So make sure you understand your track. If you know your track, you can eliminate the horses on their pace capabilities alone.
It's a good idea to track that daily, because I have a worksheet that I keep every day, and that way you're able to tell the turn of the racetrack on a moment's notice. Because Hollywood Park in the summer meet of 1983 changed 3 or 4 times in different directions, and I was on top of it every time. And the minute it changed, the prices would go up.
And people who live in parts of the country where they're blessed, and I say blessed in seriousness, with inclement weather more often than we have it, have greater price opportunities for these things and be zagging when everybody else is zigging. Generally speaking, the track will run two ways. Either the early speed will hang on and win, or the closing speed will win. Very seldom will a horse have extremes in either direction. If the par time for the second call is 45, let's say, a horse that runs it in 44.3 will merely cause the sustained horse to win because he's running it too fast. By the same token, a horse that closes too fast is not going to win, because you cannot be that far off the pace. Even at the most sustained pace track, New Orleans, horses should be within 5 lengths statistically in order to win. So remember, you don't want extremes of early or extremes of sustained. Find out and make yourself a par feet per second time for the second call. That's the all-important call. Not meaning that they have to be in the lead at the second call. It's where they are at your track that succeeds is par for the second call. Any more comments on that? Your statement that you stop your Betamax or whatever it is you have at the second call is the point in the race that determines the outcome of the race. Well, have we covered the subject of inclusion? What horses to include, and by inference, those that you do not include are the ones that are eliminated until you get it down to 5 or the most 6 horses. You'll find when you do get it down to 5 or 6, your win percentage will go up tremendously, because you're no longer including some of the butterfly antics of the other horses in comparison with the solid contenders. Okay, it's a well-known fact that if you pick the right pace line, and I say right in advisedly, I should say correct baseline, because there is no right or wrong baseline. There is no truly correct or incorrect baseline. There is the baseline that produces the winner. Ironically, five of us can go to Las Vegas and pick different pace lines and all have the same win percentage. One will win one race and one will win another. So difference of opinion does not prevent you from winning a high percentage of your races, although you won't win the same races as the next person with a difference of opinion on the pace line. But there are parameters. There are single things to look for in picking a correct pace line, which means a pace line that will correctly predict the outcome of the race. So, Ron, what is the most important thing you look for in a pace line pick selection?
It's probably more subjective, I guess. Well, not really, but the horse has to fit the race, in my opinion. That I have to feel that the horse belongs in that race and he's capable of winning the race. And so I'm talking about class, distance, service, fractions and so forth, and speeds. I guess that basically sums it.
Ron has gone back to the terms that we started off this discussion with, a subjective feeling, a feeling you get in the back of your neck that it fits. And people will say, well, hey, but I can't understand what he means by fit. Do you understand why your pants fit and why they don't? Try on a pair of pants that you don't feel fit. You'll know they don't feel fit. It's the same way. You'll know it when it's right. By the same token, if you're a little bit confused now, you know when it's wrong. Ron is saying that you, when you have it down, you'll know it, and your subconscious will tell you you're right. And that's when to make your bet. Bob?
Well, I'd like to go to the other end of the subject. You all, I'm sure, give pretty good advice on the best way to approach a pace line. I have a statement about once you're all done, you're going out to the track. I don't know how many people go with others and get to the track and then have their ears open to all kinds of influences from other people. Stick with your own decision. You spend all this time selecting your pace lines, doing all the work. Don't let somebody else talk you off your work. Follow through with what your mind told you to do in the first place. And just follow your own lead.
Bravo. Tom?
Well, I'm not going to address the pace line itself necessarily, but I think my record keeping is the most valuable tool I've got.
I'm delighted you brought it up.
Because for a little stretch here in the current Santa Anita meeting, in a sprint, you had to have the best last fraction, literally. Now, the pace line was crucial to choose that. But when you began to select the bet from the pace lines, you almost had to include the horse with the best last fraction. The same thing held true, I mentioned a minute ago, at the end of the Hollywood meeting in the summer, our X factor, you know, the first and third fractions divided by two, became an all-time winner in sprints. Not just the top two, the top one was winning almost every sprint that was run. That's a moneymaker if you're tracking that in your own records.
Very good point. People say, why do you have so many readouts? Why do you have so many factors you consider? That's because one of those factors, or one in combination with one other, will win at a given time at a given track, and you have all those, and as Tom says, keep a record of what's winning, and one of those factors will be outstanding and will produce winners. Larry?
Well, what I do is look at the last four or five races, and you can determine its class level, you know, a compagnonus. You do the same thing, normally, look at its class level and see if it fits like Ron says. Into that race.
If you can't tell where it fits, the best tool, is, as Larry said, to determine whether it fits is to use the pace of the horse, pace of the race that we used on Campleanos in the manual. So if there's any question in your mind where it fits or whether it fits, read that section again. Dean, you got any comments on some one salient factor which you think is the most important?
Well, since I've just been doing this, just 2 days since I got my program in the mail, but I'm very, very pleased with the way that, with the pace of the race, the pace of the horse, how you can go back and run the prior 10 races, and you can see the class, you can see if he's in or out of class, you can see if he's going in or out of form, and it's very important to run it. I'm crazy about running. I run every horse. I don't care.
Well, that has proven to be, and Dean is relatively new, but Dean has been very successful in using these computer programs, and he sensed that right away, and I thought bringing in someone who is new with us would show you that it does not take a long time to grasp this if you use all the tools that are provided. Now, we don't expect you to do a profile of every horse in every race as a consistent thing. But what we're suggesting to you now is that you do it a few times. After you've seen a few pace profiles using pace of the horse, pace of the race, then you will get that feeling that Ron gets of knowing innately, subconsciously, when the horse does or does not fit. Al, your ultimate suggestion?
Well, I have to concur and agree with everybody's comments. I'm looking for pace lines of horses that will tell me where they fit in terms of current class, current condition, distance preference, surface preference. And if I can gain that knowledge from doing pace lines on all the contenders, then I feel I've got a real handle on the race and that I'm going to come up with a winner most of the time. On the other hand, if I've got that nagging doubt that says I don't really have a line on all the horses in this race, that there are mystery horses or horses that shouldn't be here, and I can't answer the question why they're here, and I got a mixed bag of horses, I'm going to pass the race. There's another race coming right up, and I'm going to win that one. I don't have to win the mystery race.
One good answer to two different questions. When in doubt, read the manual, and when in doubt about the race, pass. Frank?
Well, I agree with Al. I don't know what ameliorated means either.
That's something that psychologists and psychiatrists do to the patients because they can't cure them. They ameliorate them. Outside of that, what are your final comments on?
Well, I really don't. I think everything has been pretty adequately covered. I agree with Ron and his feelings. I too have developed that, and when Bob mentioned about distractions, there's no way that you're going to be able to be consistent or establish a consistent percentage if you're not going to go with your own intuition. If you're going to allow other things to distract you, you're pretty much beat before you go to the race.
My final comment is know your track. If you know the characteristics of your track, then you can always win at your track. If you know what readouts are winning under given circumstances at your track, you will always win. Here's what I know about Santa Anita, for instance, and you can say this about Fairmont Park or Hialeah or whatever track you play. I know that when it's dry, it runs fast early. I know that when it first rains, it runs very fast early. Then when it starts drying out, it runs sustained. Now, you say that's not very much knowledge to have about a track, but it's enough to have about that track so that I'll know when to play sustain and when to play early, and that's the top secret of winning at that track. Know those few things about your own track, and you'll be a consistent winner because you'll know what wins at your track. And don't listen to anybody who says they have a universal method that'll give you a single number that'll win at any track. This is a fraudulent concept. Anybody who perpetrates it is perpetrating a fraud. Each individual track must be studied by the person who expects to beat it. Don't expect to win unless you put in the effort to know the game that you're playing and know the rules by which it's played and know what is victory. If you don't know the 21-20 score in a football game goes to the team that got the 21 over the one that got the 20, then you don't understand who wins a football game. It's the same in racing. Know the rules of the game. When I say rules, I'm not talking about handicapping rules. I'm talking about the rules of horse racing. Know how to read the form. Know what governs winning times, winning fractions, winning class. And above all, know your track. One slight addendum here before we close. We've been told that what we've been doing since 1975 is, in essence, what is currently called trip handicapping, in that we are analyzing the trip taken by each individual contender from the starting gate to the wire. Now, you can sometimes determine why a last race was bad and go back to a second or third race in this manner. Let us say a speed horse had the rail position. Look at what the horse next to him did if your speed horse failed to function with his normal getting out of the gate fast procedure. Was he blocked? If he had a very slow first fraction when he traditionally has a fast one, then look to see what his second fraction was. After he was probably blocked or had a bad release from the gate, he gained ground, not enough perhaps to win the race or even to place or show, but demonstrating still that he was in condition and that the reason he did not get his usual early start was because he was blocked. So look at what the horse in the position next to him did, and it might solve that problem. Also, if the horse was on the extreme outside, and he's normally a fast-breaking horse, see if that might have impeded his progress. If every time he's on the outside, he doesn't move fast from the gate, that's a clue that the last race was not a total bummer, but was caused by what happened during the trip. Look at that second fraction. If the horse loses ground at the beginning but starts making it up in the second fraction, you know he's still in condition, so you can safely go back to a better race. Also, let me point out something else very important. We win about the same percentage of races whether the horse is going off at even odds or under, or if he's going off at 20 to 1. The odds on the board do not determine the relative value of that horse's chance to win a race. We have our own method of determining odds, which has been supplied to us by programmer and client and PERCO member Dean Daly, which will soon be ready. Our viable factors are entered into a mathematical formula which predicts the odds at which that horse should be going off. Consequently, in using this program, we many times see a horse that should be 2 to 1 going off at 12 or even 20 to 1. We know we have a terrific bet. This program is now under preparation.